Oh, is this thing on?
Hi, guys. It's good to be back on stage again.
What was that? I don't know.
Totally metal.
This is Distortion with Higo, jamming new music and interviews into your earpipes every week.
Ah, yes. Welcome once again to the Distortion Podcast. My name is Higo. Thank you so much for joining me. Let's get the housework out of the way. You can email me anytime, talktohigo@gmail.com. I do have a backlog of emails I need to get through, so if you have sent them to me, I have got them, I have seen them, I am listening, and I will get them on the show as soon as I can. You can also find me on Twitter at Higo74. I'm on Facebook at Distortion with Higo. And if you want to become a Patreon, if you think this podcast is worth a little bit of your coin, feel free to jump onto patreon.com/Higo. Right, coming up on the show, I have a very special guest. I sat down with this young lady yesterday, and we had an awesome chat, and I needed to find out. It'd been so long between us sitting down that I needed to find out what was actually happening in their world. And I'm talking about Jenna, the lead singer from Tonight Alive, who have been doing amazing things and have a new album on the way in January. But first, I want to play you their brand new single, Temple, just to get you into the mood for this brand new album. Have a listen to this, Tonight Alive, Temple on Distortion. Tonight Alive, now a four-piece band. The song is called Temple, and it's from their brand new album, Underworld, which is out on the 12th of January next year. As I mentioned at the top of the show, it had been so long since I'd sat down with anyone from Tonight Alive to have a chinwag, so I organised to go and hang out with Jenna, and this is how it went down. Hi!
Hey!
Like we haven't said hello already.
I know, but it's kind of cool to say it again.
Yeah, it is. We're starting an official interview now, Jenna from Tonight Alive. It is so great to see you. And
thank you.
You've been here in, well, I should say we're in Melbourne. We're at the UNFD offices in Richmond, Victoria. And you've been hanging around for a bit.
I have.
Not normally your state?
No, it's not.
But it's
I'm
good.
I'm a Sydney gal.
But?
But, I don't know, I feel inspired down here. Something makes me feel younger in Melbourne. I think maybe it's just being around such a good music scene. And
hang on a minute. Something makes you feel younger.
Yeah, is that okay
have
to
you
say that?
Just turned 25?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Okay. I just feel a lot more free here. I feel like everybody's on some kind of path, whether that's towards like their big dreams or whether it's just towards like just personal like liberation of some sort, you know. I don't know. I just like get down here and I feel inspired and I feel like I want to create music and I feel like I want to get out and yeah, be social. I don't know. There's something about it. I guess because you grow up in the same place and you live there and every time I get back from tour, I don't know, my life's been on repeat for a while. So
it has.
Mm.
Really, this is all your life has been since high school.
Yeah, that's right.
So, which is really unusual for a lot of people because they'll go and work the normal job for a little bit and then try and pursue something. But this was kind of thrust upon you in a way. You got asked to join the band. Geez, I think your first rehearsal was when you were 16, the day before?
Yes, exactly, yeah, the day before I turned 16. Good memory.
But that's just, well, this is the Rolodex in my head going from when we first spoke many years ago. But that's really, you hit the ground running with that and then and took off. And things sort of came quick and fast. Was it difficult as a young girl to try and catch up with everything that was happening around you?
I think it was more difficult when I came into my 20s, like sort of coming up to 25 and looking back on it and going, oh, that was kind of like really unusual. And my life's been really different to most people. And, you know, I've definitely felt that isolation, not knowing how to relate and everybody moving on or just pursuing different things. And yeah, just I feel like everyone's at a different stage to me. And it's, I think, yeah, of course it was probably had its challenges as a teenager, but I was too excited to notice. Mm. And it wasn't until I was in my probably 21, 22 when I was like, oh, wait a second, I'm kind of lost.
You missed a lot of formative years because of this.
Yeah, probably why I say I feel young at 25 now is because I'm able to kind of run around and, I don't know, let go of this whole concept of being a public figure, which I have been since I was 16.
Yeah, that's a really weird thing,
on, you know, a minor
too.
Level, but, like, people always had something to say about my choices, and that can kind of get in your head.
Really? Yeah, it would, especially being young.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy for everyone to go, oh, don't listen to them, don't listen to them. But when you don't really know any different, that becomes the norm, doesn't
right,
it?
So your filter's not quite attuned.
It's not as, and like you said, when you get into your 20s, oh, that's what they meant.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Now, at school it was choir and stuff like that. Is there any other musical people in the family? I don't think I've ever asked you this before, but were you kind of the standout in that regard, the black sheep?
I am a black sheep for sure. Mm. My parents love music though. My dad's kind of like a rock and roller, so hearing, you know, rock music in the car on the way to school every day was a big part of why I was into music. And I kind of taught myself to play drums because I'd like tap on my legs to Elton John and AC/DC and Queen and stuff in the backseat of the car when we went camping and stuff. So I don't know, it was always kind of, it was in my blood in that way.
What is that what he was playing, the Elton Johns and Queens and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Now, that's classic
not,
stuff.
Yeah, that's not a bad sort of foundry of brilliant artists. So where did you find your voice after listening to that in the car? What did you sort of gravitate towards?
It wasn't until I was into punk music, like pop punk, really, like in high school. And I remember hearing Avril for the first time and then Simple Plan and Blink, Sum 41, Good Charlotte, stuff like that. That's when I was like, I can do this. Also, it was Missy Higgins when I was about 10. She came out with Scar.
Mm-hmm.
And I sang along to it. It suited my voice. It was one of the first things that I could sing that I wasn't really forcing. Whereas, like, I know Aretha Franklin and stuff like that, my dad would have in the car, and I couldn't sing along to it. And you know, you had like...
You can, but like an octave lower.
Yeah.
Or, and you can't get that emotion in it. When
exactly.
You,
when Christina Aguilera and Anastasia, like they were the pop stars when I was growing up, and I couldn't do that either. So it wasn't until
everyone
high
can
school.
Do Anastasia. You just go, I'm out of love.
That's a great impression, actually. I reckon I could do that for karaoke.
She's like the female versions of the Eddie Vedders, that yarling.
Oh, true.
Wah, 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 like that.
It's definitely like a contorted sound.
So, sometimes I just think we're just sitting in an office here now. They'd be used to hearing people they do
would.
That kind of stuff.
So. I think so.
Yeah, it's a contorted sort of forced.
Mm-hmm.
And so school, choir,
mm-hmm.
and then...
A little bit of theatre. Yeah.
Is that something that sort of come back to you at any stage and you went, oh, I could probably do a bit of that?
Not really. I think I feel too silly for some reason. I think I don't like to act. I don't like feeling like I'm being ingenuine in any way.
But musicals is a bit more... exaggerated than just acting.
Yes, you know what I mean? So true.
Because you've got to project and you've got to be a little bit silly.
Mm.
I think you'd be good at it.
Thanks. I had a lot of fun.
Mm.
I was in Godspell and, gee, what else was I in? I think like our school ran Oklahoma and stuff like that.
Nice.
Yeah. It's kind of goofy, but I had a good time doing it.
Mm. Talking about these years that have just flown by, 9 years in Tonight Alive, now you say you're getting to an age where you kind of look back and go, geez, it's... That's pretty amazing stuff. You know, the Warped Tour a couple of times and touring with these amazing bands and getting to work with producers that you were like, are you kidding me?
Mm.
And then getting Hoppus on a song. And now everyone knows that Corey Taylor's on one of the songs on the new album. And when do you ever stop? And that, but that's normal to you. You know what I mean? Like for the rest of us, it's not normal.
Right.
But for you, this is normal. This is business. This is your life.
Mm.
Do you ever sort of stop and go, I wonder what normal life's like?
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty far out. Like, it sounds all pretty sparkly when you put it all in one sentence like that. And it
is. Of course it does, yeah.
It's epic. And I guess, like, it's pretty cool that you can look back on nearly a decade of music and dedication and passion and all that kind of stuff and say, hey, like, there are some pretty major highlights to that time. It's cool. And, yeah, and I do think about what normal life would be. And I...
Do you ever think, what would you do if you hadn't have done this?
I do, like, have that thought and then I never finish it. I never answer the question. I don't know what the hell is next or, you know, what the alternative
was. Not that I'm suggesting
was.
That you should do something else, but
yeah.
Was there anything else when you were just sort of getting into the music stuff at school where you went, I could be a vet?
No.
Or I could, nothing.
Zero.
It was just music.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Once I was on the path, I didn't want to take any sidesteps, you know.
Excellent.
Yeah. And everyone used to say, and, you know, it hasn't been said to me for a while, but what's the backup plan? What's your plan B?
You don't need
everyone
one.
Said that. And I was like, I think if you have a plan B, it means you're willing for plan A to fail. And I wasn't.
Perfectly
that was my
said.
Head. Yeah, that was my mindset.
When I was writing out a few of these things here, you know, working with Good Charlotte, Simple Plan, getting the song featured on Spider-Man, those highlights throughout the 10 years, Crack My Heart was playing because I listened to the new album.
Really cool.
And that is a really great song.
Thank you.
And I also wrote another note later on here. Oh, yeah. It feels like, this new album feels like you've finally let go of something.
Hmm. Does it?
Yeah.
Is that how I sound?
Yeah.
And how the songs sound?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think the track listing and the sequencing is really good.
Cool. Thanks.
And but it just feels like it is more than just a collection of songs. This has been sequenced to tell a story. That's what I got from listening to the album. And it feels like there's an underlying message that you are trying to get out.
Yeah, I love that interpretation. I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I just think it's so recent.
Do you think it was unintentional?
In a way, for sure, yeah. Mm. I mean, we wrote heaps of songs and those were the ones that were picked. So like they all come from the same family because we wrote them in 3 months. We wrote the record really quickly, which is really cool because we've never done that before. And I guess we're experienced enough now and we were kind of in a zone emotionally and personally. And we had the time off really to just say, like, let's really dedicate the next few months to this. And I don't think it's far. I don't think I've had enough time to reflect on it yet to really know, like, to really put words to what you're saying right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
But we definitely had a lot to let go of after the last record because it was quite a controlled period of our career.
Well, maybe that could be it.
Mm.
You know, we spoke a week and a half ago at the download launch and you did say that there was some fairly heavy restrictions on what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just like this bursting out and doing it your own way again with the help of these guys, of course. But maybe that's what it is. Maybe I've overread it.
No, not at all. I don't think you've ever read anything. I think there's definitely like a spiritual undertone or overtone to the record where, you know, I was being introduced to things like stand in the fire and return to the child. And these are these concepts that are like, be with your pain, know your darkness. And that's what underworld is. Underworld is like a plane of reality where you have to go to do your shadow work. So there's all these terms that were coming to me that I was researching and trying to explore my dark side and learn about all the things that I had never finished grieving or I didn't, you know, parts of myself that I've rejected and neglected and things like that. So there's a lot of work going on that record. And being off the road for 3 months gave me an opportunity to really look at that stuff. And it came out through the songs, but in a subconscious way. So it's not until later that I'm able to hear our songs back and say, oh, that's what I was going through at the time. It's pretty hard to, you know, understand what you're doing when you've got a microscope on it. So still, you know, the last song was Temple that we wrote, and that was in May. So it's really, it doesn't feel like that long ago. I mean, it's, what is it, 5 or 6 months ago?
Yeah. So it is still very, very new.
It's all fresh. And, you know, doing that tour, the Back to Beginnings tour, I said on stage, I was like, my wounds are still open, like, on these songs and at this time. So,
What's your family like? Like, is it, you got brothers and sisters and stuff like that?
I've got two younger sisters.
What did they think of Big Sister cruising the world and playing to, you know, thousands of people? And does she dig your music? Do they dig your music?
It's old news, hey, like to them. Well, they don't give a damn. But like my little sister is 15. She's my youngest sister and she listens to the same music I listened to when I was 15, which blows my mind. When she turned 13, I gave her a mix CD called like Emo Classics or something like that. And I just gave her all the punk rock emo that I liked. And she really digs it and she really, really connects with the music too that we're putting out. And you know, she suffers with the same like condition as me, which is eczema. And so she really understands Temple, where I'm talking about being trapped in your body and being so desperate. And so it's cool. We can connect on that.
That is cool because they're going to be the ultimate sounding board and they will pull no punches.
They're super honest.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
But can be deflating.
Yeah.
As much as you need it. But I think that's the right people to hear it from is definitely family.
Yeah, you know? My middle sister Hannah, who's 2 years younger than me, she's always someone that I can take music to and get her opinion. And if I think I've written something that reminds me of something else, I'll say, well, do you know what this song is? And she's kind of a little music guru like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Has she ever just flat out said, that's rubbish?
Not that I can recall, thankfully.
Do you think, is she just doing that just to save your feelings?
Or? No way.
That's nice then.
That is nice.
What about your parents?
Yeah.
Are they still saying, when are you going to get a real job?
they say it when I'm off tour for a little while and I've just been hanging out. The thing about being off tour is like, you just really have to assimilate for a little while. Mm. And then you kind of think, okay, what haven't I done for the last 6 months that I could do to work on myself or to enjoy my life more? Who haven't I seen? And yeah, it's pretty foreign to them. And I do have like a little bit of guilt about the fact that, you know, people do 9 to 5 and I've just kind of had a different life.
But like what you said at the start, it seems very star-spangly when you put all those highlights together, but there are those awful moments as well that go along with any job in any walk of life. And music is absolutely no different from that. And anyone who thinks that being on the road for 6 months is, you know, beer and Skittles is sorely mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
It's bloody hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get sick, then bad luck. Mm-hmm. You've got to keep going.
Yeah.
So it's
it's hard on your mental health too.
Well, exactly. You're confined with your brothers in arms and that is your group. And if someone gets out of line, then it throws a faction between two people and not good.
Yeah, you're constantly working with dynamics and relationships and, you know, making people happy and being a good performer, but also, you know, like trying to channel something that's really special and meaning it every time you do it.
Mm.
I don't think anyone comes to work every day and means what they're doing. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but like, it's something you have to switch on. You got to do it consciously.
There would be some walks of life that people would mean it every day, but yeah, for your normal office worker 9 to 5, probably, probably not.
So I'm lucky. I could never see myself in that position, and I'm glad I chose this life.
I'm glad you did too.
Thank you.
It's been fun watching you.
In a way, you kind of don't choose. You know what I mean?
No, I don't think you.
Part of you is just on your path.
Yeah, and I think it was the right selection of people. that needed to be changed early on, and it's now going through another transition. But that doesn't mean it's going to be any less important, and that's something we spoke about. I don't know, have you guys spoken about Whack much about him leaving?
Yeah, we have, yeah. It's been touched on.
A little bit.
He can go there.
I wasn't too sure because I know that he was, and you told me this, that he was just an unbelievable force behind the band, and he was feeling everything first.
Exactly.
And
got a great memory.
And he's now wanting to sort of explore other things and really take a step back a little bit. How did everyone in the band take that news? Was it a long time coming, or did he just come to you guys one day and say, this is kind of where my head's at?
I felt it coming for a couple of years. The guys,
couple of years?
Yeah, yeah. For like the last 2 years, there have been conversations where, you know, if we're the, you know, second out of four bands on a B-market tour in America where we're not even breaking even, and we get off stage after, you know, gear issues, and, you know, maybe 20 people have heard of us before and we don't make any money on merch that night. You come back to the bus or the van or whatever we're traveling in, and you just sort of sit there and go, I'm on the other side of the world and I'm not in love with my life. And it, you know, it goes straight to the heart, because you get up there and you play something you wrote, and you are your art, or you are your work, you know what I mean? You use your body, you use your hands, you use your voice, and you try and entertain and excite people. And if you don't get that connection, sometimes it's really, you feel like it's your own fault. And there are a lot of moments like that where I just saw his pain, and he never cared about the industry. He never cared about the creative, like the marketing and the, he hates social media and he just doesn't have time for it. And I really respect that about him, actually, because it makes him free. It makes him not feel tied down or feel like he has to make anybody else happy but himself. So that's a great quality that kind of doesn't really suit the whole package of being in a band. He'd probably be great as like a ghostwriter or something like that, but not that he needs to be a ghostwriter. His name should be all over his work. But, you know, we wrote Underworld together. Unfortunately, we won't tour it together, but it's still his album. And I think that he's going to be a lot happier when he doesn't have to do photo shoots and, you know, post on Twitter and like promote a record and go on tour. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's a bit of a grind for him, and he'll be happier when he's just creative, and then he can let his art go when it goes to another artist.
You know, a few years down the track, you'll be doing a gig somewhere, he'll be there, and the fans will go mental because he'll walk out and he'll play a song with you guys. I think it would be fantastic, because there is no ill will between the band and him leaving. It is all supportive. And it'll happen one day. When he's ready, it'll probably happen.
Yeah, thank you.
And your fans will go bananas.
Yeah, you know, when I've said to him, like, you know, if things go well with the record, or, like, if there is, like, a special show or a really special tour, like, if we finally get to do this venue that we've always talked about doing, you've got to do it with us. And I think that he'll feel happy to do that.
Are there any of those? What are those venues?
I'd like to play Brixton in London.
Beautiful.
I'd like to play Horden. I mean, I guess I'd like to play Enmore next year. I mean, we've supported there.
Right, never a headline there. Okay.
You know, my biggest dream was Acer Arena in Sydney, which is pretty far out. I mean, it's probably tens of thousands of people. I think I've let go of that.
It's not tens of thousands.
Is it not?
It's only about 10.
Is it?
Yeah. It's not that big.
Well, now that you say it like that.
Hang on, which one's Acer?
Acer is in Homebush, which is now called All Phones, and it may have changed again.
Oh, yeah, that's probably about 15,000.
Okay.
Something like that. But that's not... That's not
too far out.
No, not at all.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Don't ever stop.
Thank you.
One of the things, I've spoken to bands for many, many years, and everyone starts at, you know, playing at the local pub or whatever, and especially for Melbourne bands, and there'd be Sydney equivalents, of course, they want to play at the Corner Hotel. That's an aspirational venue. It's about a 900-capacity room. But if you headline and sell out the Corner... It's a level of respect, and you've earned a certain sort of stature within the community. And so there are venues like that in Sydney, like Oxford Art Factory, and, you know, places like that. But even Frankie's by the Slice, people get buzzed when they get a gig there, and that's not really a good place to see bands, let's be honest. It's a great vibe, and I love the place. But there are those venues that people, you know, incremental steps. So I don't think that something like Acer Arena should ever be off your radar.
Thank you.
Because you just got to keep going.
Thank you so much.
Can you imagine if In Excess, you know, in the 80s, would they ever think that they'd be playing sold out Wembley?
Whoa, did they?
Yeah.
Far out. out.
The old Wembley, 72,000 people.
That's humongous. Far out, man.
Can you imagine doing that?
I can't imagine it.
Exactly.
I've seen so many music DVDs and.
Well, see, when you see Queen doing it in 86, that's mental. But our own INXS did it. They started in pubs in Sydney.
That's far out.
So nothing is off the table.
Thank you.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Anyone who wants to keep going, you just got to keep pushing.
Yeah, I'm prepared to.
Now, talking about your fans, you do, and I see this on Twitter quite a bit, the interaction that you have with your fans is amazing. You have, the stuff they write to you must just leave you sort of short of breath at times.
Mm, like, I definitely save a lot of messages.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible thing. And along with that, going to gigs and having fans sing your lyrics back to you, how was that the first time you...
I remember the first time, you know, it was like the first time that the crowd was louder than us was this place called, what was it? It was back in the days of the Destroy All Lines clubs.
Okay.
So was it Trash? It's called Trash, which is the Argyle Hotel, I think, in Sydney. Anyway, maybe there was like 80 or 100 people there, and Wasting Away had just come out, our first sort of single. It was off our first EP, and we got a little bit of radio, and... yeah, I just remember the crowd being louder than me, and it was the first moment that I pulled the mic away from my face and, like, my jaw dropped. I was like, oh, my God, I never knew what that felt like. That's far out. And it still happens, and people kind of do knock me back a little bit. It happened at the Corner a couple weeks ago, and it happened at Oxford Arts, as you mentioned, too. Like, those two shows were far out on this last tour that we did. Yeah.
Yeah, that's – I mean,
never gets old.
No. Well, even as a punter going to gigs – and I sing along to all the bands that I go to. It's everything everyone does. It's something you can't help but doing. But it's very hard to get it from the other side, that energy that's coming at you from the other side.
Mm.
We would never understand it,
right,
having never been in that position. So, yeah, it's a great explanation. Hey, you will never forget the first time that it happened to you.
No way. I just love a mass of people united doing the same thing. Anytime there's like a collective energy, it's just kind of like you can't not pay attention to it.
And every one of those people has a different connection to the song.
Yeah.
If you came out and said, this song is about this, 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 and this, people would go, yeah, but it means this to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beautiful thing about it. A lot of people would always say, well, what's that song about?
Yeah.
What were you trying to say there, Jenna?
Yeah.
And you go, no, you make your own interpretation.
Yeah. Sometimes it's nice to leave it up to people as well, because half the time, not half the time, but there is a good portion of the time that I don't know. Like I said to you, it takes me a little while to like reflect and to look back and understand who I was at the time and what was happening and why I said what I said.
Mm.
That's part of the healing process, is to understand it later.
And other times it is just straight up. You have an idea and you go bang and write it out? Or are they mostly just random words on a bit of paper?
They're definitely not random. I mean, they have intention, and I'm very mindful about my lyrics. I don't ever want to paint a picture that would insinuate that there's no silver lining. But on this record with Temple, I broke out of that.
You sure did.
Yeah. I mean, the first line says, I'm intoxicated by my depression. And I've never said anything like that.
I don't know if I wrote something down like that. Keep talking, telling me.
Yeah, no worries. Well, yeah, I thought I've tried to look out for our fans so much that I think maybe I've sacrificed expressing myself honestly, because I always want to make sure people know like you can help yourself, and we are kind of a self-help band. I call our genre conscious rock, and I want people to feel empowered when they see our show and listen to our music. So it was a little scary for me to go into that territory of abandoning the silver lining a little bit, but we've got a whole catalogue of music to make up for that for one song.
You've got to do. Looking for Heaven, was that what I'd written down?
Yeah. One
that's
song.
That's full on.
Mm. It's cool you mentioned that. Thanks.
Well, this is while I was writing stuff down. I'd had to stop because I was listening to the album. And so if I've written down a song, that means it's interrupted what I was doing because I needed to listen to it.
Yeah,
and I needed to listen to it again.
Right.
And hear what you were saying. And that's pretty amazing. And that's probably why I thought when you said you've come out of that. Do you think that by trying to make things safe and have that silver lining with your lyrics, that I know you said you're not always being honest with yourself, and now you've made that conscious effort to kind of switch over, are you afraid of what that might bring?
I'm really excited. I want to know that part of myself that's not like, yeah, but anyway. And everything I, you know, whenever I say something dark or a little scary, I always go, But yeah, anyway, and try and...
You back out of it.
Yeah, do
yeah.
you?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to scare people. I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable. But I think music that makes you uncomfortable is pretty rad to listen to, so...
I think so.
I want to be challenged, so...
Well, not so long ago, Kesha released a new single and everyone lost their minds about it because it was the same thing. She went from this poppy, flashy, fake facade and all of a sudden just poured her heart out and sang like a demon. And everyone just went, why weren't you doing this from the start?
Yeah, hell yeah.
You know?
It takes that pain to inspire you in a way.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think there is something really brave about opening or tearing off a layer and going... You know all this stuff that I was saying, that's not untrue, but here's the extra bit that you didn't get to see earlier.
Yeah. It's cool that you said that because Crack My Heart is kind of about cracking the calcification, you know, like on that most tender part of your body or that most tender part of your being that wants to be vulnerable, that wants to be soft. But like I definitely felt like I had to harden myself to be safe and I couldn't feel everything I wanted to feel because it was too overwhelming and I wasn't going to be able to carry the weight of it. Especially on tour and especially getting on stage every day and living that type of lifestyle. I just didn't think I had any time or energy or safety to do that. So Crack My Heart is about that unveiling of the hardening that has to happen. Mm.
What do you hope for this album for fans? What do you want them to get out of it?
I guess I want people to come closer to feeling free in themselves and in their lives. And I think that's a choice that people have to make for themselves. It's not something anyone else can do for you. You want to be free. I mean, everybody else is trying to trap you in a way, unless they're a great friend and unless they've gone through that liberation themselves. Most people are going to say, but this is the way it's always been, or here are the rules, and you know, but what will people say? And I don't know, I think everyone's so afraid.
Everyone is,
yeah,
always, of everything, and we shouldn't be.
Yeah. And I think Jim Carrey said, like, you either come from love or you come from fear. So choose love. Like, choose the loving path for yourself, which is to set yourself free. And I really hope our music can be a soundtrack for people on that journey.
I think, and I don't want to overstate it, but listening to the album a couple of times, I think this will be the album where it will define the band.
Whoa.
Because... No, it's not no disrespect to anything up to this point.
None taken.
But that was a band finding where they are for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this album will be the one that people sort of go, right, now we're into second gear, off we go.
Well, I'm just grateful that anyone gave us a chance while we were still figuring our shit out. It's been a long time, you know.
It has been. I mean, I tried to push as much as I could when I was at Triple M and would play you guys when I could.
Because I wanted
more
that.
People to hear it. There's, and that goes for, you know, the majority of the roster here now. People need to hear this stuff.
Yeah, I
agree. And I think that the old, I think the rock circle is starting to come back again, which is nice.
Yeah, it's getting stronger and it's expanding. Like, it's very cool.
Breaking down doors again like it did in the 90s, which is nice.
Oh, man, that's the goal, hey. Yeah, let's get back in people's faces, challenge them.
Exactly.
Them, yeah.
Exactly. Get them to go, oh, it's not that bad, that whole scary rock thing.
Right.
Yeah. So tell us about how did Corey Taylor from Slipknot and Stone Sour, in case anyone's living under a bloody rock, how did this collaboration come about?
Yeah, I actually just reached out to him. Like he started following me on Twitter a couple of years ago. So that door kind of opened. And I reached out to him at the time and said, I really admire you and your work. And he said, likewise. And I didn't really take that too seriously at all. But I reached out to him this year and said, there's a song on this record that I can hear your voice on and I'd love to send it to you, but there's no pressure for you to, you know, to sing on it. And he wrote back in like 4 minutes to be exact. He said, I'd love to, in capital letters.
It's a fucking amazing song.
Thank you. Wow.
He sounds... And you're right. And this is not overstating it. The song is fucking killer.
Thank you. Fuck. That's so cool to hear that.
It is so good. And the way that your voices flick back and forth, like about three quarters of the way through, where you're in different key, and it's just, it's magic.
Thank you.
It is really, like you hear the song and you go, fucking, Corey sounds amazing.
Yeah, he does.
I don't think people give him enough credit sometimes.
Yeah.
For the way that he, well, I mean, he always gets, you know, a fair rub of the green. People love him. But for his softer side, I don't think a lot of people I think people will hear a different Corey on this song.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because that's something I really wanted to achieve with him, because I really love Vermillion Part 2. That's like my favourite Slipknot song. And I just remember being 15 and falling in love with Slipknot through that song. And I said that to him, and I really liked that raw, tender side of your voice. And he said, well, yeah, that's how I'll approach it then. And yeah, and everything you hear is pretty much his artistic choice. So the song was written, but he modified the melodies and he added those call and response A, B vocals in the bridge and in the last chorus and stuff. So, and he wrote that harmony. So he's very much a part of the essence of the song, more so than just a feature
voice. Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah. Because that was for me what made it really something else.
Me too. I think when you said magic, I think that's a really cool way to say it, because I think it's enchanting, actually, that song. It has, I guess it's in 3/4, so kind of has some kind of magical feel to it.
It does. Yeah. It's a little bit of weirdness.
Dream time, yeah.
But it works. I went into it thinking, it's either going to be fucking phenomenal or it'll be okay. But I'm glad that it came out the way it did.
Thank you.
And I think it's a magnificent way to close out the album. People will really... I think what's going to happen is your fans are just going to skip straight to that, when they get the album.
Yeah.
They'll just go, oh, what's he done?
Well, it'd be epic to do it live together one day.
Well, again.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
No, it is not.
He's a pretty open-minded guy.
He is. He's a gentleman, and I reckon he would absolutely relish the opportunity if there was a festival or a gig somewhere that you could do it. He would absolutely do it.
Oh, man, what a dream. I mean, we played Soundwave 2015 and Slipknot headlined. I remember standing in the crowd that night at the end of my day, and it had just got dark, and it was a very eerie, scary set, like the way that they start the show. I just remember that anticipation. It'd be really great to play a festival together again.
Bloody hell, 2 years ago.
Yeah, well, nearly three.
That was the last one.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Crikey.
It's pretty groovy, that download's come.
It's amazing.
But Unify and Download now. I mean, exactly. The community's is kicking back.
Exactly.
Pushing back,
Wow. And so what happens, the album's out Feb 18?
January 12th.
January 12th. Oh, I don't know whose is Feb 18.
It's all right. It's not.
Someone else's is.
Not too far off.
No, it's not. It's actually closer than I thought. And then what happens? Obviously, Download, Unify, and then, you go back overseas.
Yeah, we do.
I did see that.
Yeah, we start in America with Silverstein. We're co-headlining.
That's right.
Yeah, and then we'll go to England for, some of the Underworld touring and come back here, and we won't be playing Download, but we would like to be announcing a tour around that time. So.
Oh, okay. Mm. Oh, yeah. There you go. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, thank you.
So this is the other thing that people don't realize, that the amount of touring you do, this actually feels like one of the longest breaks you've had.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a quiet year, really. We spent 3 months writing the record and did a few shows in England and a festival, and then we recorded it. Now we've had like nearly 6 months off setting up the record.
Yeah.
So next year's going to be full steam.
Does it feel weird when you go, right, the album's done and now you sit around twiddling your thumbs?
Yeah. I mean, we've definitely been busy since we finished making the record. I've been down here in Melbourne at Unified a lot. And
Just hanging out.
Well, you could say I'm hanging out too, yeah. We've made a couple of videos and, we created the artwork. I made the artwork down here with Neil Walters, our friend who's a photographer.
Oh, yeah, Neil is brilliant.
You do know him?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Neil's a ripper.
Yeah, absolutely. So we created the art together and, I don't know, I've kind of been on a working holiday.
Yeah, in the best city in the country.
Yeah, I'm actually loving it.
You'll soon call home.
Probably.
Yeah, that's it.
It's coming.
Yes. You'll be welcome with open arms.
Thank you.
For sure. Hey, thank you so much for having a chinwag
Such
with me today.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm really happy for you. The album is going to be, I can't wait for people to hear it.
Me too.
Because I'm really proud of you and I'm proud
thank
of everyone
so
in the band.
Thank you so much. So nice to hear that.
And I'm looking forward to 2018 when you're just going to be smashing people's faces.
It's going to be rocking out.
It is. You just got to wait. You've got to wait until you hear it.
Cheers.
What's the next single?
It will be Crack My Heart, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Which I thought you might have known since you were mentioning it.
No, that was purely just because I thought the song was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it's so cool. It's going to be out in a couple of weeks.
It's usually, if I pick a song, that's usually the next single.
Wow.
That's how it works with bands.
You've got a good year, man.
Well, it's how many years? Nearly 20 years in radio.
You've got to know.
you got to know. Mm-hmm. And that's just, that is it. So looking out for that one. And Jenna, as always, an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Hugo, me too.
Massive thanks to Jenna McDougall from Tonight Alive for having an awesome chat with me. And I'm really excited for you to hear this brand new album, Underworld. It is really something special. So look out for that one. It comes out the 12th of January next year. I also want to thank Amy from Unified for setting up the interview as well. They're an amazing bunch of people. And don't forget, Unified Gathering is happening on the 12th, 13th, 14th of January next year. Sold out, but you never know. You might be able to find yourself a ticket. People sometimes just can't make it for whatever reason. So you just keep your eyes on your socials and you might be able to sneak along there and check out Tonight Alive performing. And I so desperately want to play you Underworld, the title track that features Corey Taylor, but I can't, and that's really bums me out because it is such a great, great song, and I know that you're really going to dig it too. So keep an eye out for it, keep an eye out for the new single, Crack My Heart, and I will keep you up to date with everything to do with Tonight Alive as the date of that album, 12th of January, gets closer. Well, that's it for this week's show. I hope you enjoyed the chat, and I don't know who I've got a couple of ideas on who might be on the show next week, but I will let you know in due course. Until next time, keep it loud.